Photography can be a powerful tool to focus attention on important issues, like the environment. Welcome to Mothering Earth, your source for sustainable living news. I'm Salwa Khan. Let's explore how photographer Jim Richardson uses his craft to tell stories about environmental issues, stories that strongly affect people's thoughts and feelings. Richardson has been a National Geographic magazine photographer for 35 years. His assignments for National Geographic have included water issues, food, agriculture, light pollution, and more. Richardson's photographs convey both deep meaning and beauty, and he was named the photographer's photographer by his National Geographic colleagues. I'm honored to have him as my guest on Mothering Earth. I asked him to introduce us to the start of his photographic journey.
I grew up on a farm in Kansas, a small farm that we had a dairy and about 200 acres, which was quite small even then, you know. So I was sort of a loner kid, and so I had lots of hobbies, microscopes and building telescopes and model airplanes and model railroads and all the rest, and photography. So that was the beginning of my photography interest, was out there taking pictures of my dogs and the cottonwood trees and the squirrels.
Is there any one thing that you can remember that got you interested in photography?
Well, you know, my dad was an amateur photographer. He drove trucks. He hauled eggs from our little farming area there in Kansas down to Texas. And along the way, he would stop at pawn shops and buy cameras, a lot of them, but cameras, and he was quite interested in, and he brought some pretty good cameras home, and he had a big pile of Modern Photography magazine, and that all looked rather romantic to a kid on a farm, you know, seeing all these New York photographers with lots and lots of lenses and equipment. And so that really was the impetus, yeah. My dad and his cameras.
And so your first subjects were things around you, right?
Oh, of course, yes. I was photographing the ducks on the pond and photographing through my microscope, photographing, you know, paramecium and amoebas, and all those little creatures down in the water, and through my binoculars at the squirrels and lightning bolts from the thunderstorms and all those other kind of experimental things that made doing photography a fun experience for a kid.
And so this, of course, was back in the days when we were using film. Were you sending your film to be developed, or did you, I guess, at some point learn to do it yourself?
I did for a while, sent it off to Giant Photo in Lincoln, Nebraska. Yeah. Wait 2 weeks for the photos to come back. And then finally, Dad found a darkroom outfit in some pawn shop in Oklahoma and brought it home. And I started closing off the kitchen in the evening while Mom and Dad were in there watching I Love Lucy and developing my own film and then making prints. And that, of course, was magical. It is always magical the first time you see a print come up in the developer tray under that red light of a dark room. That was always magical. That got me started.
Do you remember how old you were at that time?
12 or 13, maybe. Yeah, not very old.
How did you develop your skills as a photographer?
Well, I kept doing amateur photography and taking my pictures to the county fair. But really, when I got into college, I kept doing a few things. And finally, when I was a senior and I was majoring in psychology, one day I figured out that I didn't really want to be a psychologist. So I went and I had a friend who was a photographer on the student newspaper at Kansas State University, the Kansas State Collegian, and I got a job. They had an opening, and I just started doing it. with no journalism training or anything like that. But I started doing it, and I was, turned out I wasn't so bad at it.
So what kinds of things were you photographing then?
Big Eight football games, fraternity and sorority parties, school, university meetings, just all kinds of things for the daily newspaper, protests. You know, this was Vietnam era, and as well as all the kind of things you would photograph for the yearbook, and that was a great training ground.
Do you think you have a natural eye for composing a picture, or is it also something that you develop as you go along and kind of study pictures, including your own?
I suppose I have some graphic predilection, yes. However, I'm not very convinced by the whole business of photographers having an eye. You can sort of tell the fingerprint of a photographer by how they put things together, but a whole lot of it is learned. It's a whole lot of it is learned studying other photographs and other photographers, seeing how they organize things, how they say things. If they are a photographer who can make statements with pictures, how do they do it? That's a very big consideration, and that takes a lot of learning. I think people like to think, you know, that somebody just is automatically good at photography. I'm not very convinced of that at all. I think there's a lot of learning involved.
And then you went on to work at a newspaper. Tell us about that.
I got a summer internship in Topeka at the Topeka Capital Journal, really just down the road about an hour. And that was the real breakthrough, because that was, at the time, this would have been about 1970, was the best, arguably the best photographic newspaper in the country. You know, at that time, places like the New York Times and the Washington Post weren't very good, but places like Topeka were, and there weren't many places like Topeka. There were. This was under the tutelage of Rich Clarkson, who probably has been the single most important mentor of photographers in America. The staff were all young, enthusiastic, aspiring, greedy photographers like me, who saw their future in photography, and so a number of those went on. Out of that group of photographers, we had three or four National Geographic photographers, three of the directors of photography at National Geographic, and the editor of National Geographic. Out of that group of seven or eight photographers on the staff of the Topeka Capital Journal. And the great thing about a newspaper work is that you come in every day and you pick up your assignments, and you have to go out and be creative, and you have to make pictures out of these things, whatever they are, whether it's a city council meeting or a feature story, an announcement at the governor's mansion, an auto accident, a football game on Friday night at some high school. You have to go make pictures of that, and you don't get to wait until you are inspired. You have to go make pictures. And so being able to do that was really a great learning experience.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan, here with Jim Richardson. He's a photographer for National Geographic. And how did you begin working at National Geographic?
My first story was a story on the flooding of the Great Salt Lake. And I had done that for the Denver Post when I was there. I went to Washington through a serendipitous event and showed it to the editors. And they immediately assigned me to do a story for them on the same subject. So that was a good happenstance. And then several years, but that didn't really lead to full-time work for the magazine. That happened a couple of years later when I left the Denver Post and called up Tom Kennedy, who was the director of photography at National Geographic, and said, "Well, Tom, I'm now a full-time freelance photographer. Let me know if I can help you out." And he said, "Well, you know, I have a story on Atlanta that I've been trying to assign, and I liked what you did in that documentary work on that small town of Kansas called Cuba, Kansas. And maybe you'd like to give Atlanta a try." So that was the first story assigned after I became a freelancer. And but by then, you see, I had already done several books, lots of magazine assignments for magazines like Time and Newsweek and Sports Illustrated. And I was well known by then. And so they knew me and I knew them. And so it was actually a rather quick transition.
So you, at some point, you left the newspaper and became a freelance photographer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the triggering event was that the Denver Post had a buyout. They were downsizing, and I took the buyout and called up Tom. And within about 15 minutes, I had my first assignment for National Geographic as a freelance photographer.
Wow, that worked out well.
It did.
So a lot of your work is about the natural world. What sparked What sparked your interest in the environment and in environmental issues?
Well, I think it was a natural progression because I'd always been interested in nature. I mean, I grew up on a farm, so I was interested in nature, but I was also interested in broader issues that because I've always been an ardent reader of history and social issues. So being able to take on significant subjects photographically had been in my DNA way back. And so National Geographic gave me a platform for that. Now, I think most people think of National Geographic assignments as being something like, we're going to go photograph the Grand Canyon. You know, people think you're just kind of going to go out there and hang around the Grand Canyon until you get a bunch of really gorgeous pictures and then go put them in the pages of National Geographic. And the actual process is they always start with a story proposal. They start with an idea of why a subject is not just important, why not just visually interesting, but why our readers would like it. All those things have to come together to make a good story proposal. And then once you have that, it's the whole business of figuring out how to make the pictures that will tell that story. So that intellectually is a fascinating endeavor. If it was just about going out and being out in the field with a camera and taking pictures, I probably never would have been that interested in it. I mean, I do like taking pictures, but it's the telling of the stories that really is the deep reward of it. And being able to tell important stories, things about the environment, things that have big impact to people across the world and to large populations, that's really the fun of it to me.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm your host, Salwa Khan, and my guest is Jim Richardson, who's an amazing photographer. He's worked at the National Geographic magazine for 35 years, where he's photographed over 50 stories, many of them stories about human effects on the natural world. His pictures illustrate important environmental issues.
Now, some of the topics you covered related to environment are soil conservation, water, food, food production, and grasslands. Are all these topics that the magazine then assigned to you, or were they things, in other words, do you ever come to the magazine and say, how about we do a story on this?
The stories you just mentioned were a collaboration with a good friend of mine, Dennis Dimmick, who was the senior editor for the environment at National Geographic. But to answer your broader question there, most of my stories were things that either I had already been involved in, or more specifically, that I wrote the story proposal. It was much better business for several reasons, as I'll explain, to be the person instigating the idea, to write the story proposal. It means that you get to do the architecture of the story. And because we are a visual magazine, a picture-driven magazine, you want to make sure that you're doing a story that is photographable. There are things to point a camera at that will make interesting pictures, to be simple and blunt. The real reason is there are certain kinds of stories that nobody else is bringing up. You know, some of those agriculture stories that you mentioned, soil, you know, food safety, you know, rather arcane subjects, you know, that if we hadn't brought them up, they probably wouldn't have gotten done, you know. And that's a significant area, I think, of responsibility for photographers, is to consider what good you can do with the pictures, for one thing, and what subjects are worth doing.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan, here with Jim Richardson, National Geographic photographer. Can we kind of walk through an actual assignment with you? I don't know, whatever topic you want to pick. I had suggested water. But to kind of go through, what is your process? Do you do some research? Do you go out and find people, you know, that you want to photograph? Anyway, just give us a picture of that.
Sure. Well, you mentioned water, and a good one would be the Colorado River. And that was an earlier story, one of the earliest water stories that I did. And we've seen lots of news about the Colorado River in the 30 years since we did that story for National Geographic. That one came out of a story proposal that I had written. The National Geographic gave the go-ahead to do that. And as is typical, then a photographer, a writer, a cartographer, maybe an illustrator would be assigned part of the picture team, a text editor, a picture editor, all this part of the team assembled to make that story come to life. And once that is done, then it would be the job of the photographer and the picture editor to go off and do a visual story treatment. Let's call it design, an outline, whatever, you know, basically saying, okay, here's where we're going to go, and here's what we're going to try to see. Here are the issues we're going to cover, and here are some places where we think we can find them. The writer would be doing something similar relative to the text about their plan of coverage. Let's say on the Colorado River, it's a big river. It's a long river. There's lots of things you could photograph. So what are you going to photograph? Dennis, my picture editor's idea was very revealing, and I'll share that with you. He says, let us assume that you have a 24-page story. That's 12 spreads in the magazine, two-page spreads. And he said, you know, imagine the question, each spread can say one thing. What are the 12 things you'd like to say about the Colorado River? And I would say, okay, well, it starts high in the Rocky Mountains. There's a lot of wilderness associated with it. It's the water lifeline of a dry Southwest. They use it all up with various irrigation projects. And the last of it goes into Mexico, where it never again reaches the sea. So I just ticked off like five ideas there for you, Salwa. In other words, start coming up with a list of places where we can go and see that. And so basically, and so on a story like this, I would probably find 300 possible subjects to photograph. And I actually on them, like on that case, I photographed 100 different subjects over the 12 weeks that I was in the field. So, and then that all gets boiled down to, we would show the editor a tray of 80 pictures out of the, oh, I shot 40,000 pictures on that. I shot 1,000 rolls of film on that. And that would get boiled down through 2 weeks of editing down to 80 pictures to show to the editor. And then we would pare that down to 40 pictures that we were going to do the layout from. And the final story would be maybe 20 pictures. So you can see the sort of the percolating up of these ideas and the eventual. And that whole process that I just mentioned took 6 to 8 months, maybe a year.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan here with Jim Richardson, National Geographic photographer. What do you think about when you're starting to take pictures as you're, you know, sort of composing your shots?
There's a quote that I used when I was teaching travel photography at some of our seminars. And I said that if you want to be a better photographer, stand in front of more interesting stuff. And so, yes, it's one of the first rules. Find something interesting. Because I say that because there are a lot of photographers who are very clever at, well, let's call it knob turning, you know, sort of the photographic magic that you can do with filters and settings and all those kind of things, you know. And what you don't want to do, like for our kind of work, was you don't want to do an interesting picture of boring stuff. You know, you need interesting content. And so part of that is actually being out in the field and finding unique, new, interesting things. And the second is having educated yourself. And some, you know, this is like the prior reading I would do on a place. So that I had some background of understanding the place so that I would recognize interesting things when I was standing in front of them. There are other times, though, Saul, in which I'm standing out there and there really is just something over the top wonderful out in front of me. I think back to, I was out there on the Isle of Muck with Lawrence McEwen, the farmer who owned the island. He's a laird. He's a medieval laird, really. And we had this wonderful opportunity. He's up on the top of the hill. We're looking out over the islands. And all of a sudden, you know, his dog comes up and Lawrence had this great face with the eagle eyes and he looks at me and at that moment, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know, through the viewfinder, I'm saying, this is incredible, you know, and I'm thinking really basic things like, well, get it in focus. Those are some of those moments you don't get very often.
Right.
I mean, you don't get them every day. You don't get them every month. You may not get more than a handful of them in your whole career. But when they are in front of you, then there's this great sense of not only excitement, but maybe panic, you know, that here is this thing that I have been gifted with. I need to be a good enough photographer here in this moment right now to get it. And those really are panic moments when that happens sometimes.
Now, obviously you are a world-class photographer. Your pictures are so amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Do you have any tips for us lesser photographers?
I'm much of the mind that photographs have jobs to do. They need to do some work, you know, not just hang on our walls and make our living rooms prettier, but they have real jobs to do in the world about how we as a species understand our world, the decisions we make, the impacts we have on the environment and all kinds of other things. The basic principle, though, is that you take more pictures, and this will sound fairly stupid, but throw away the bad ones. You know, in other words, pick the good ones, and give them an opportunity to have a visual life. So, I mean, I can say that more directly. I say, take a lot of pictures and throw away the bad ones. But the real impact of that is do the winnowing, do the evaluation of the pictures, and find the things that really work. And not only make those the pictures that you show, but make those the pictures that you learn from. My biggest missive to photographers is don't do boring pictures. Not a simple thing to do, but don't do boring pictures. Be interesting. But that process is the hard intellectual work of both taking the pictures and finding the good ones. And the corollary of that is learning from the pictures that went well. You take this picture and you say, what did I do right in that situation? And then you go do it some more. And you hone that skill and you refine your ability to not just do it occasionally, but to do it on demand. Do it, have it as the kind of skill like something you could pull out of your camera bag in a critical moment and use it to make a better picture.
Great tips for all you environmental photographers out there. That's all for now. Thanks so much to our guest, Jim Richardson, an acclaimed National Geographic environmental photographer. And thanks so much to you for listening. Our website is mothering-earth.com. Until next time, this is Salwa Khan, signing off for Mothering Earth, your source for sustainable living news. The views and opinions expressed on Mothering Earth do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of this station.